So for our beginning meditation tonight, we're without our higher self, lower self, and mass candles. Is Becky here?
Yeah.
Yeah, Becky. Do you know if we got them to my house?
I only had two of them.
Huh. Okay.
I brought those
too. Okay. My candles have disappeared, but that's okay. We're going to use a little Christmas candle. In preparation for our very brief meditation tonight, we are going to focus on the symbol of light, the meaning of light, the illumination of light. In Hanukkah and Christmas and Solstice and Kwanzaa, all of the traditional holiday events this time of year, there is a focus on light, and light as symbolizing our dedication to the highest and the best and the most good in us, symbolizing a rededication to the sacred in our lives, the sacredness of our temples, the sacredness of the holy. And the work of the path, as we come upon the winter solstice, when there is less light in the world than any other day of the year, the focus and the attention is on the light that is the eternal flame that is within. So for a very brief meditation, I'm going to briefly light this candle. I don't think it will last for very long. It's a small candle and it has paper at the foot of it. But I want to give you an image of the light. And then, if possible, in your meditation, I want to ask you to take the image of that light and place it in your heart and be able to visualize it and see it as much as you can in your heart. As your mind travels away from this flame, which it will again and again and again and again, call it back to an image, a visual of that flame in your heart. So that's the meditation practice. For those of you who are new, all we say about meditation is that it's an opportunity to sit with yourself and quiet, breathe, notice how many places your mind travels away to, planning, plotting, assessing, judging, blaming, being bored, and just note it and call yourself back to the breathing and to the flame that I'm going to give you an image of by lighting briefly this candle. If I forget to blow it out, please let me know. So if you all can see that, my invitation is that you take a few deep breaths, focus on the candle, allow yourself to draw the image of this light inside your heart, and when you're ready to let go, close your eyes, keeping the image of that light, that flame, in your heart, and return to it again and again and again as your mind travels away to its various and sundry places. So every time we put that practice in our lives of focusing our attention on our breathing and quieting our mind by calling it back again and again and again to a place of quiet, focusing on our breathing, focusing on a light, we are training our minds to become less of a power in our lives and training it to become less of a burden. And we're taking a step closer to getting to that which we really aim for in path work, which is our deeper selves, our truer selves, where goodness and truth and beauty and love live, and we don't have a lot of access to it because we spend so much time in our minds worrying about the future and grieving the past and blaming and assessing and critiquing. So every moment that we can interrupt that and go back to our breathing for 3 or 5 minutes a day, we are heading home to our true selves and God. So it's important to keep that practice in place as much time as you can. And it's very simple to understand and hard to do. Why is it hard to do? Anybody know?
We really don't want to.
It's that simple. We don't want to. We don't want to. We are busy with the drives of our personality, of our mind, of our ego, and, you know, their matters are so essential and so important that we don't have time. Okay. But the guide from Pathwork says that the real truth of that matter is that there is a resistance. And you're going to understand that more tonight. That there are things that we are devoted to and gratified by that gives us a lot of misery and a lot of suffering, but it's familiar, and we want the gratification, and we resist leaving it behind and really moving toward the light. So that's truth, that we just need to get honest about it. The workshop we did last Saturday, I taught a new distinction that's really important. It's very helpful to me. Is you can either meditate several times every day, very powerful, or you can notice, how is it that I resist my meditation every day? Don't have the time, it's boring, I have things to do, doesn't work anyway. If we can merely make ourselves conscious of that resistance, get this, we are meditating. Can anyone tell me why?
Because that's the whole point of meditation, is bringing your mind back however much you can.
Right, and seeing how our mind doesn't want to come back is a meditation practice. That's as powerful as calling it back, calling it back, calling it back. So you can't get it wrong. That's the good news. You can't get it wrong. And meditation has incredible power, and you'll hear me announce that at every lecture. So my board has asked me to make sure that in the beginning of every lecture, I do a review, that I do some sort of review for those of us who are regulars. Unfortunately, we always have some new people. So we want to do a review for those of you who are new to kind of get you up to speed and on board a little bit with what we do here. One of my teachers and trainers said to me, you know, when people first start out in this work, don't expect them to get it and understand it at all. They won't. There will be some distant, dreamy sense that there's something here that I might be attracted to It doesn't make a lot of sense to me yet. How many of you feel like you started out there? That, yeah, it says, what is she talking about? But it sounds like it matters. It sounds like something I want, but it makes no sense. So give yourself time and patience and just pay attention to your heart and see if there's a quiet, deep little place that resonates with what we say tonight. This is a complicated lecture, by the way. I can't believe that we are doing a lecture that is this advanced in First Wednesday, but we selected it and we're doing it. So, for the review tonight, before we open up the lecture, I want to talk a bit about transformation and what it is that we mean by transformation and what we mean about bringing these principles into the world. So we haven't gotten to the lecture yet. When we talk about transformation, we are talking about altering something at its core. We're talking about altering something at its roots. And what we are seeking to alternate in the pathwork transformation, I think this is probably true in all transformational programs, is what we are trying to alter the condition of being a human being that we all share in common. And the guide says it is universal and it is all encompassing. And what's really interesting, not only have I read that the guide says this, but many other spiritual traditions say the same thing, including one anthropologist who has studied all of the world's cultures, including advanced cultures and indigenous cultures. And she says the condition of being human is the same everywhere. I think that's rather stunning. You know, we think on the other side of the ocean they're different, or, you know, in the Australian Aborigines they're different, you know. But in terms of the structures, which I will talk about in just a moment, that we live from, that orient us, that direct our lives, and we call it the ego, and we call it the personality, and we call it the mind. And I'm not going to go into that tonight. That will be a later lecture. But what you need to know about those structures, this is most important to get, is that they are insecure, they are fragile, they're self-centered, and they're wobbly and precarious. So at the root of our nature, as we understand it, we're rather shaky beings, and no one is spared. It's like we will project onto Mahatma Gandhi or, you know, Obama or Bill Clinton or Rockefeller was a good president. He was Republican. But, you know, there are many, many, many good leaders that we project a lot of greatness into. They are at the mercy of the same thing. They are operating from some human structures. It's what we have that organizes our experience for us. And those structures are insecure, fragile, and wobbly. Because they're false, and they're all based on fear. And no one is spared. We might pretend that we aren't frightened, but it's not true. It is all, the guide says, it's all encompassing. It is the human experience. So because of this fact, we human beings are very reactive. And when I say reactive, what I mean is very different from emotions. We will talk about that in a moment. When we are reactive, and we're going to be working on this one a lot tonight, we are judging and blaming either ourselves, other people, life, or the world as bad and wrong. Now that's how we function. day in and day out in our personality and our minds and our egos, that's something's wrong. Something's wrong with me, something wrong with life, something's wrong with you. And it comes out of the fact that these structures are very insecure and wobbly because they're not based on anything that's real. They're based on things that are false. There are real things about us, which we will get to later, but these are not they. The ego, the personality, the mind are false structures that have been programmed and learned and conditioned across time since humankind has been evolving on the earth plane. Up until now, we could kind of stay stuck in our limited way of being without facing the urgency to change. Now, again, if I didn't say it, I'll say it now and I'll repeat it. Because we are so insecure and fragile and vulnerable, we're reactive, we're combative, we're argumentative, and we're even violent. And all of that lives in these insecure structures that we live from for our lives. Does that make sense? Are you able to relate to that? Do you have a question about it before we go on? Yes. Alex, were you raising your hand or you're just stretching? Okay. Does it make sense to everybody? Can you nod? Because sometimes some of these notions are kind of like out there and advanced, and it's like, am I making sense? So I want to make sure that you're with me before I go on to the next point. Okay, so the problem is human consciousness as we know it is absolutely retarded when it comes to our technological capability, which is phenomenal. Our human consciousness, our capacity as human beings, has not begun to catch up with what we can do technologically. And therefore, we're in a position that one person could pull a switch and wipe out the earth. That's a scary thing. And because of all of our technological advances and the prices that our environment has paid for these technological advances, our planet is in trouble. Very much in trouble. I have some examples here. Andrew Harvey, some of you here with me, visited with him and heard him when he was in Pittsburgh back last fall. And his book, Radical Passion, this is what he writes. And this is pretty kind of stunning, I think. He says, we are already in an apocalyptic situation, one that is worsening spectacularly month by month. A global financial elite drunk on greed and desire for total control manipulate the banks, the markets, the media, and the political parties. The gap between the tiny handful of the rich and the billions of destitute or deeply struggling human beings widens daily. Nothing real is being done to address the now lethal menace of global warming. Our food and water are increasingly poisoned. 90%, get this, 90% of the sea is polluted. Many of our crucial liberties have been so drastically curtailed that the foundations of a global fascist state are now visible to all of those with the eyes to see. Hundreds of animal and plant species are vanishing every month in the largest continuing extinction event since the Ice Age. Now, these words are from a PhD Rhodes Scholar, so he ain't a guy in the diner. What more evidence should any awake human being need to show that we are in extreme danger and must respond comprehensively and urgently before spreading disaster becomes irreversible extinction? This is the state of the world. He goes on to say that perhaps the most alarming, and this is where we come in, even devastating aspect of this unprecedented crisis is the denial, the apathy, and the paralysis of the greatest majority of the human race. We aren't getting it. We're in denial about it. So Andrew Harvey's particular bent on the transformation of human consciousness is to say that we must birth the divine human that is in all of us, and that the dark night of the soul that we are going through right now can be, and I love this distinction, can be the birth canal for the new divine consciousness that lives inside of us that is going to save the world. The world is not going to be saved by our personality, by our ego, or by our minds. That's what we have to face. They don't have the resources, the flexibility, the whole view, the connection with humankind to be able to solve problems that are that huge. It's only according to Andrew Harvey going to be solved if we birth that which is deep within us, which is our own divine humanity. And this is where Pathwork enters in. So every single lecture we study gives us a piece of this negative, dark, fear-based humanity from the ego, the personality, and the mind, and gives us a way of naming it and distinguishing it and taking responsibility for a piece of it. Again, and it's universal and it's all-encompassing in the human condition. And it's this consciousness that has had these horrific outcomes, these events in our lives, being what they are. But according to the guide, and I think it's one of the reasons that this work must be as important to us as it is that we don't have to despair. I think the temptation is to think, God, what can I do? That's so much bigger than I am. I guess we'll just lay down and die. What can I do? And this is how Pathwork answers. We can take responsibility for transforming our own consciousness, our consciousness that is the same as the collective consciousness that has produced these current outcomes. We have to take responsibility for that in our own minds and our own hearts. That lives in us. And as we seek to transform these pieces of negativity as they live in each of us individually, and it's what I love so much about the guy, he, she gives us pieces step by step by step by step how to do it. I mean, we have a handbook. These lectures are a handbook. This, and we're going to do a great one tonight. This is what you can do to transform your own consciousness. And in doing that, transform the world. One soul, one light at a time. That's the hope. So the point is to be able to see our limitations, our negativities as a species, take responsibility for it, seek it in ourselves individually without denying it, without pretending that it isn't so. So that the light and the goodness that lives in each of our souls can be brought forth and can direct our personal lives. The promise is that there eventually can be a tipping point before it is too late. That the light can eventually outshine the darkness, and we can be saved individually, and we can be saved as a species. This is the promise of the work that we do. It's why we do it. It isn't just about transforming my own individual consciousness. It is about lighting up my light so that eventually there will be a zillion lights and we will tip from being dominated by darkness, consumptiveness, greed, competitiveness, winning, losing, and be dominated instead by connection, love, inclusiveness, creativity. That's the promise. So tonight's lecture, we have a stinky piece we're going to face tonight. A really stinky piece. It was hard for me to take. I don't know about the rest of you. How many of you read the lecture? It was hard. It was very confrontive, really and truly confrontive. So the desire for happiness and the desire for unhappiness. We all, you can flip to the next one, Joe. We all have within us an unrecognized, this is new material for me as well. These lectures are, you know, we have 258 of them, and I haven't been trained in all of them. This is a new one. We have an infant in our lives, and as a matter of fact, the guide calls this infant part the ruler. And it literally rules our lives in very important ways. Not always. I mean, we aren't only the infant. We aren't only the ruler. There's more to us than this. But this infant ruler has great power in our lives, and it has power to destroy. And it does. So what do we know about this ruler? It wants what it wants in the way that it wants it, when it wants it, and now. And it is worse than it wants it. It demands it. And it wants 100% pleasure and control 100% of the time. This is the ruler. This is the demanding infant that lives inside of us and has huge, huge play in our lives. So the first thing to, go ahead, Joe. The first thing to get about this is that this demanding infant that lives inside of us is hidden. It's absolutely hidden, and it's unconscious, and it's underground. Not only do we not know of its existence and its play in our lives, we don't want to know it. Is there anything that makes sense about that to you before we go on? We don't want to know it. Why would we not want to know it? Any guesses?
Then we'd have to be responsible for it.
Okay, we'd have to be responsible for it.
Ugly.
Yeah, it's ugly. Anything else you can think of?
Mortifying.
It's mortifying.
Afraid that if we acknowledge it, that it will mean that that's all that we are and that's what others will see of us.
Right. That's a biggie. We think if we really admit to that, that we'll think that's all we are and that other people will think that's all we are. But the biggest reason we don't want to admit it is that the ego and the mind and the personality do not want to see the infant ruler. Because the ruler is one of their most important tools and weapons. The ruler is the source of their false security. And remember, the ego and the mind and the personality are insecure, self-centered, and wobbly. So when we do this work on the path, much of what we come to know, to understand, and eventually see and bring into consciousness has heretofore been deeply unconscious. We've been unaware of it. We've been unaware of the play that it has in our lives. The upside, what is so thrilling about it, is when we see something that is this kind of nasty and dark and self-centered and kind of shameful, and if we can own it and we can take responsibility for it, the ground of our being starts to shift. We start to become different. And some of the gifts that come out of that are new energy, a sense of liberation, some new joy comes in, some serenity comes in, lovingness comes in, and these are no small matters for our lives and for the planet. So the beauty, the huge, humiliating challenge is having to face this, pardon me, quote, crap. It's really hard to face how much it runs our lives. But the glorious news is if we can face it, accept it, hold it with compassion, and not hold it against ourselves, tremendous power and joy and liberation start to flow into our lives. So let's go back to this infant for a moment that lives unconsciously in all of us, but has tremendous power in everybody's lives. Again, it wants what it wants and the way it wants it, when it wants it, and it wants it now. More than it wants it, it demands it. It wants 100% pleasure and control 100% of the time. Furthermore, it thinks it should be possible to get 100% happiness. It wants 100% approval from others all the time, and anything than this is complete unhappiness and feels like death to this unconscious infant. Yes, not quite. Let me finish this one, and you sure can. So the important thing to get about that is if I ask you, you know, is it true that, you know, you think you can have happiness and control, you know, 100% of the time? You say, no, that's absurd. I don't think that at all. It's ridiculous. Isn't it? Doesn't it sound ridiculous? But it's not an intellectual construct. That's what it makes no sense, because it's an emotional reality that's based on emotional reactivity. And the guide says that it is like one of the deepest conditions in our human psychology. It's like way down there at the bottom and the core. It's way, way down there deep. So, Joe, next one. So, obviously, you know, this infant part of us figures out that it ain't happening. It's not getting 100% happiness. It's not getting 100% control. So, it does, it draws upon one of the most popular and conniving strategies of all in the human psyche. It decides, I'll be perfect. I'll make it happen, and then everyone will love me and adore me, and I'll be 100% happy. So I work and I work and I work. I'm going to get it right. I promise you, I'm going to keep working and I'm going to get right, and I'm going to be perfect, and I'm going to be adored, and everybody's going to love me, and I'm going to be 100% happiness. But then the infant sees he, she isn't perfect, and everyone doesn't love him, her. It ain't happening. So how do you think this turns out for us?
Not good.
The way it turns out, flip Joe to the next one. Well, since I wasn't able to pull it off being perfect, there must be something wrong with me. I must be bad, inadequate, worthless, because I can't get 100% happiness, and I suppose I know I'm supposed to. And then there are a lot of emotional reactions that come with that. When we talk about emotional reactions, I've said it before, but I keep saying it. When we talk about emotional reactions, we are talking about those reactions in us that are blaming me, blaming you, or blaming life. Those aren't real feelings. Those are emotional reactions. Real feelings are what we talked about last month. Our sorrow, our grief, our hurt, our disappointment, our losses, when it didn't work out. Those feelings don't hurt us. They deepen us. They expand us. They enrich us. They heal us. They grow us. Our emotional reactions actually injure us. But again, since we have these fragile personalities, we can't stand that all this blame is on me for my unhappiness. This is too overwhelming for such a wobbly structure that we are. So what do? We blame others. If you would just love me in the way I need you to love me, if you would just respect me in the way I need you to respect me, adore me in the way I need you to respect me, then I would be happy. So bottom line here is, the wrong concept of the ruler is I can only be happy if things go my way. Only if I have what I want the way I want it can I have happiness. Now you can ask your question. Or did I answer it?
Yeah, I don't know if I should ask.
Yeah. Oh, it's already gone. Okay.
Well, actually, I'm new and I don't really want to interrupt. You know? I'm just curious about something. That the ruler... But the ruler person that you're talking about, I understand what you're talking about.
Good.
But like, is that like just one part of us, or is that like most of us, or is there other parts? You know what I mean?
There are many, many more aspects. Okay. We study a different aspect every time.
Okay,
yes. Yes, we study many, and often the guide is talking about the same thing, but this time he's coming at it this way, and this time she is coming at it this way. It gets approached in every way possible so that we can get a consciousness about how we're structured as human beings. Okay, so when we conclude, because we don't have this 100% happiness, that there's something terrible, terribly wrong with us, that we're bad and worthless and inadequate, it can become very specific. And this is an important part to get. The ruler mentality can be acted out on the self, or others, or both. And I'm going to read this part slowly. The demand upon the self is, because I don't have what I want, because I'm not skinny, because I am skinny, because I'm not smart enough, my station in life, my sex, my race, my sexuality, my class is not what I wanted, what I demand. I am worthless. That's what the ruler does. This is the demand of the ruler. So rage about life and its desire to have it just the way it wanted it gets turned against the self, in the form of self-judgment and hate. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the ruler. That part of us that blames and judges us for not being this, for being that, for, you know, having this, having that, for having been planted in these circumstances and not that circumstance, and you have this and I don't, and you have that and I should have it. That's the ruler. So I want you to stop and just take a moment with you and your notebook and see if you can start getting conscious about your ruler. See if you can just write a few notes about your ruler. What are your demands? If I had this, I would be happy. Just free associate. It's no right, no wrong. Just start getting a view of your ruler. I am mad at myself. I am mad at life. I'm mad at my parents because I don't have thus and so, and I am miserable, and I should be happy. I should be able to have 100% happiness. This is the infant, the ruler. How does it play out in your life? Anybody want to share? No. You don't have to. Alex?
If my partner knew how right I am about it.
Okay. Okay. And there's a real demand. I would be 100% happy if she just understood me. Yeah. Judy? Yeah, and you could really be happy if you could help every animal in the world.
Everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Pam?
I can remember thinking I had to be perfect from when I was a little kid.
Uh-huh.
And then when I couldn't, I tried to get everybody's approval and love and endorsement. And when I couldn't do that, it turned into, well, then I have to be right.
Right. If I can't be perfect, then I have to be in control, be right. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And I would, give up so much in order to be right.
To be right. Anybody else? What's your ruler like? Yes.
If I had better parents.
Yeah, right. That whole situation was ruined. I deserve 100% happiness. And I demanded to have had good parents, and I didn't. Yep. Great. Anybody else? Yes.
If I could win all the time, if I could win arguments, win others over to my way of thinking, I could just win.
Win-win, yes. Win-win. And I demand it, and I deserve it. It's how it should be here down on earth. I should be able to win and be right and be in control at all times. And again, I want you to appreciate this is not intellectual. This is not what we claim. It's how we live emotionally. Anybody else? Yes?
I don't know if I would be 100% happy if this would happen.
Well, it's what, of course you wouldn't, but it's emotionally what we feel.
80%.
Yeah.
I'm not just being honest. I mean, I just think I'd be 80% happy.
Uh-huh.
If I would know the outcome of a serious problem I have right now, because it's taking time, and I'm praying and everything, but see, I want somebody to come to the crystal ball.
And I demand to know it right now in order to be happy.
No, that's all.
Yeah,
you know?
So, good.
You know, I'd be happier because I'm like...
I must know. It's not like... I'd prefer to know.
I'm
like
all the time.
Yeah, that's the demand. Okay, somebody else? Yes.
Mine has a lot to do with struggle, I think.
Speak up a little bit.
If I would just try harder, if I would just work harder, if I could be a little nicer, be a little more clever.
I could be 100% happy. And if I get it right, if I keep struggling with it, I'm going to get there and I'm going to be 100% happy. Yeah, I'm just not quite there yet. I keep trying. I'm really trying hard. Okay? Anybody else? Yes, Billy.
Yeah, if my clients were highly understanding when things didn't go well and highly acknowledging when they did go well all the time, then I would be happy.
All the time. Right. It's the all the time. Yes, absolutely. Okay. So, here's the kicker for me. So obviously we can't be 100% happy. So what we're going to do, and this is the really unconscious piece. Oh, did I do all these? Okay, the ruler can only be happy when his will is done. I'm ruler over my subjects. They must pay homage to me, so I possess a subject. You know, have you ever felt that in your relationship, that you want control, and when it goes your way, you're happy, and when it doesn't, you're unhappy, and it shouldn't be that way, okay? Caught in a life and death duality, when I'm not getting what I demand, it feels like a death, a certain kind of death. We use a forcing current to get what we want. We manipulate, or we dominate, or we control, because we have to have it, because we have to have 100% happiness, and we know if we get it right, we're going to have 100% happiness. Surrender to no one. Lots of emotional reactions, okay? Cannot tolerate frustration. Selfish giving or no giving at all. We give to get from the ruler. And we're not capable of objectivity. We're not in reality. We cannot bear criticism or exposure. And important gifts and talents that we have go unexpressed. Okay, Joe, you can switch it. So the ruler's solution is that more than anything, the ruler must have its own way. If it can't achieve 100% happiness, I will provoke and create unhappiness. This is the kicker. Let's do this again. If I can't achieve 100% happiness, I will provoke and create unhappiness. At least I will be in control. And I won't be prey to the unhappiness that is inflicted against my own will. I'm unhappy. I suffer. But I am in control. To me, this is really hard to take in. And it's some kind of faraway, deep place. I get that it's true. Yeah. So I want you to take a quiet moment with yourself, and I want you to see if you can write about the misery that is in your life, because it's better to be in control than surrender to having no control in relationship to your happiness. So just take a few minutes. Think about your misery that goes on and on and on. And allow for the possibility that this is your creation. You would rather suffer and be in control. Then face the pain of you can't have 100% happiness. You can have control somewhere. If you can't have it there, you can have it here. Look at your miserable life, folks. Don't pretend with yourself. Let yourself see. There's liberation waiting here. Let yourself see. I'm going to give you some funny examples in a moment if you're having a hard time. Actually, I think I'll jump ahead and do it for you right now. Might get your juices flowing. So if you want to know what your ruler feels like, take a moment and feel these. Someone cuts you off in traffic. Someone breaks in line in front of you. Just feel this energy. Someone gossips about you. Someone lies about you. Feel the energy. Someone snubs you. Someone shoots down your ideas. Someone insists on watching the TV show he or she wants to watch. Someone ignores or disrespects you. Someone doesn't value what you bring. Someone criticizes you, does not like you, actually wrongs you, talks loudly on the phone in the grocery store, babies are screaming on the airplane, someone doesn't answer your email or phone calls in a timely fashion. You're stuck in heavy traffic. You're detained because of bad weather. You get oodles of recordings and not a person when you are trying to connect with an agent for help. You're forced to listen to music when you are waiting for someone to pick up the phone. Scratchy, loud, ugly music. Someone takes your parking space. Someone is driving 10 miles per hour in a 25 mile per hour speed zone. Stop! What does the energy feel like? Tell me. Come on.
Anger,
frustration, anxiety.
Furious.
Pissed off. Furious.
Rage.
Judgment. Blame.
I'll get you back.
Yes. Because it shouldn't be that way, right? It should not be that way. It should be the way you want it. How could the world fail you in that way? You want 100% happiness and control at all times. So can you see that rageful response that we have in those situations is the ruler? Does that help you connect with the energy?
Say that again.
Yes. Do you understand that kind of irritated, rageful, blaming energy that we have, it is not intellectual. It is in our bodies, in our beings. The guide says it's a core condition of our being. That is the ruler in you. That's the infinite in you who thinks He should not cut in front of me. She should not talk on her phone while she's shopping. I'm right about it. I want control here. Absolutely. It's probably younger than that. Yes.
Is frustration a feeling or is it a reaction?
It's a reaction. Frustration is definitely a reaction. Yes. Good question. So this solution, this, and do you know that when we are having all of those reactions, we are creating unhappiness and we're getting off on it? We get off on that energy? Yes.
And how, I'm missing the control piece, because it feels like unhappiness is coming from, because I can't control all
it. Happiness is about control.
But it said on the previous slide, I'm going to create unhappiness.
Right.
So, you know, like I was thinking of examples for that, like I might reject someone.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid they might reject me. I'm going to reject you first.
Yeah.
You know, but
I was just giving those examples that I gave so you can feel what the energy of the ruler feels like. And it's that energy that we will create unhappiness and dissatisfaction in our life from, in order to be in control rather than to be vulnerable and prey to life's demands. Yes?
It's the difference between acknowledging that this is uncomfortable for me and acting as if I shouldn't have to deal with this discomfort.
I shouldn't have to. Exactly. I should not have to.
Like it's injustice.
Right. Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's wrong.
Yeah.
I should be happy. I should have control. I should be pleased. Things should go my way. This is the ruler.
Can a person actually be happy and then not be happy by being happy and so create unhappiness?
Absolutely. Yes, and we're going to talk about that right now. So what happens? Oh, thank you, the candle. So what happens if reality comes along? Reality is not going to offer us 100% happiness. Reality is going to offer us 50-50. The ruler will reject it. Because the ruler does not want to compromise. It wants to be in control. It doesn't want to compromise. It doesn't want to surrender. It prefers to destroy the possibility that life has to offer it rather than to give up its demand for complete happiness or complete unhappiness. And I think my guess is that this is a new notion for most of us. So reality is 50-50, not 100%. Reality is a compromise for the ruler. And the ruler will not compromise or surrender because it wants total control. The ruler rejects the possibility of happiness from reality. And the ruler would rather destroy that which is in the realm of possibility than to give up its demands for 100% happiness or unhappiness. Switch. Mm-hmm. Yep. And the guide says that this desire for unhappiness and the collecting and provoking of unhappiness is the mother of all guilt. It is the root of all other guilt feelings that we have. That at some deep level we feel very, very guilty about it. At some deep level, we know we're in error and we know that we're not in truth. But look at what the payoffs are. I'm miserable, but I'm in control. I'm miserable, but I'm not defeated. I'm miserable, but there's loads of self-destructive anger that's tasty. And I'm miserable. But, oh, I have this delicious self-pity. Yeah. Yeah, and we would rather be self-destructively angry and really hurt ourselves in order to hurt other people rather than submit to life wouldn't let me have what I wanted. Okay, Jeff. So the guide says that this will go on in our lives in an ever so subtle or not so subtle way, that we provoke people and we set up negative situations so that we can collect unhappy incidents, injustices, injuries, wrongs, and hurts. And I think here the guide has a lot of nerve, really, saying this. But if we really get this, we can give up our victimization. Once we see that we are provoking our unhappiness and pain and getting off on it because we're in control, then we can begin to see what we enjoy about it. There are many who suffer martyrdom and take great pleasure from it. And the guide says that sometimes we enjoy the provocation, you know, like we get off on creating negative experiences for ourselves and we don't see it, but like there's a power in that being provoking our unhappiness. There's a power and control in it that we get satisfaction out of. Can you relate to that at all, or is that a way too distant concept? I see people...
Pretty distant. Yeah.
Pretty distant?
Yeah.
Well, the guide says first we have to see that we do it before we see the pleasure in it.
Would an example of that also be that you know there's something you really feel good doing, but you can't quite get yourself to do it?
Keep going.
Well, you know, that there's things that you know when you do them you really feel good, and you end up kind of shifting even how you relate to other things, but you...
And just not going to do it?
Really, but you can't, you just won't do it.
And the fishy, sneaky, foul part of that would be, because that thing would be reality that would offer you 50-50. It would be great, and it would have a negative side to it. Sure, it has a negative. It's not 100% perfect happiness, so you would rather not have the happiness and fulfillment of reality because it's 50-50 and be 100% unhappy. That's how this operates.
And there's an unknown piece if you really engage in this. There's this risking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there is. Yes?
I think for me, there's a little piece of that makes me feel superior when I hold on to that.
Oh, that's a good one.
A little bit of what?
Superior.
You know, if I'm in a situation that not being self-righteousness.
Uh-huh, yeah. Like I get off on my misery. You can't control me, you can't beat me, I get off on it. Yeah, that's great. And again, the guide says this condition is universal, all-encompassing, that we human beings collect and provoke unhappiness in our own lives. How many of you have ever really thought about this, that we do this deliberately but unconsciously? Great. It's what the guide means by negative pleasure. And negative pleasure is a really hard thing to understand, but I think in this lecture it's really broken down in a beautiful way. Okay, so the way out is by bringing this infant out in the open so that we can teach it to be willing to let go of something that's absolutely useless. So we have to admit to it, we have to see it before we can start correcting it and teaching it. If we keep it hidden, the infant will go on destroying our life no matter how hard you try to pretend it to be otherwise on the surface or intellectually. Yeah. So if we are willing to give up our ruler, first of all, we have to see it. We have to taste it, know it. We have to watch it again and again and again and again and again. If we are willing to give it up because it is useless, then what we can become is the leader. As you give up the ruler as useless, you become a leader, and you accept happiness and unhappiness as a part of life. You see an object or objects for your love. You give love rather than trying to get love. You make no demands upon life. None, none. You express preferences only. This is what I want. No demands. You are willing to die. What we mean by that is willing to not get what you want and to be brokenhearted. Willing to be defeated. We are willing to relax our will function. There's no more forcing current. You have to be this way. I have to be this way. Life has to be this way. We just relax, and it is what it is, and we have our preferences. We're able to surrender to feelings, to others, to God. We can not only tolerate frustration, we use frustration. When we have a frustrating experience, we see, what can I learn from this? What's the spiritual lesson here? We give selflessly. We give for the intrinsic value of giving and loving and caring and contributing to life with no expectation of being loved in return. We're able to be objective. Or we recognize when we're not being objective. This is a biggie here. We're willing to risk exposure and criticism. And we become open to our capacity for greatness. So the right concept that we aim for here is, I can accept myself as one in the string of humanity, as imperfect as the next one, being liked by some, disliked by others. You will have truly reached maturity, and you will no longer find it necessary to damage yourself by inviting misery. By inviting misery as a substitute for the belief and 100% happiness. I don't know what was supposed to be on that slide, but it's not.
Nope, it's done. It's done. It's probably done. Is it done?
Yeah, it's done.
I'd like to go back, but it's...
Go back right now.
Say what? So go back where? Go do what? Right, I can do that. Put it back on. Yeah, I know. Okay. Press it. Is that the one, Sue? Back.
I don't know. It's my first PowerPoint, so I'm learning.
Here, where am I at?
The last slide before the end.
There you go.
There you go. Okay. You know, the one final point I want to make, and then we're going to do a Christmas meditation to close for the year. When you're sitting with yourself and you're thinking, I don't think I have this ruler in me. The guide gives some really helpful clues. He says, do you not wish to be perfect in order to have people do as you please? Do you not want to be loved and approved by everyone without exception? Do you not wish to be perfect, to be better, outstanding, more admirable than other people? Do you feel thrown by a loop when someone criticizes you or doesn't like or want you? If you are honest, you have to admit yes although you certainly never consciously expressed the desire for rulership in these terms. So again, it's an emotional reality. It's not an intellectual construct. Does that make sense? Questions, comments, concerns? Yes, Peg.
Can the ruler get so strong that it can actually overcome the rest of the person? Like Catman, you know.
Take over the whole person? Yes. Absolutely. You know, and what happens is that, you know, we all have it to a certain extent. Some people have it a lot more. But all of us have it some. Yes, a ruler can completely overtake a person. Yes.
You never know the, I'm sorry. So you never know the whole overall ever. They never know who they
are. Right, right, because the ruler consumed their personality. Yes.
So this is the child consciousness, right?
It's an aspect of child consciousness. It's beneath what we've studied in transformation programs, beneath images and that kind of thing. It's like the at the floor, the condition of being human is the infant that thinks it can have 100% happiness, and if it doesn't, something is wrong, and the rest of its life is spent trying to get it. It's not, again, it's not all of who we are, but it's an important part of who we are. Yes, Ben.
How do we bring it out in the open, and how do we re-educate it?
Well, you know, a place to start is, you know, the kind of funny examples I gave where we could all connect with that energy. That's a really good place to start because we can feel that in our body when somebody cuts us off, when somebody cuts in line in front of us. That's a really good place to start, and then we can take that energy and start looking for where that's playing out in our more ordinary lives. And imagine getting to a place where somebody could cut you off and you didn't react. That you've noticed it enough times, somebody took your parking place or somebody's talking loudly on the cell phone, that you can say, oh, there's my ruler. Oh, there's my ruler. And that you notice it enough and notice it enough that it actually, and you see that it's useless. What kind, how helpful is it to go, because somebody cut you off, you know? So we're getting off on it, on the intensity, but it's useless. Yes?
Can you talk to, is there another aspect of yourself that you talk to that ruler?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. Adult conscious ego. And again, remember that it's not all of who we are, but it has a lot of power in our lives. And the most important piece to know is that it creates unhappiness. And it does it deliberately in order to be in control. If there were a bottom line bullet to get from this lecture, it's that. You will create misery in order to be in control and not feel defeated by life. How many people can see that, get that? Great, that's fabulous, because I think it's really hard to, like, cop to.
So may I ask, so the Dalai Lama, let's just give that example, who seems to be in this place of serenity and peace and whatever else those words are, do you think has come to, you know, was he born with this aspect of demand? And,
absolutely.
And
yes,
so
he was.
Overcoming of it.
He has overcome it because he sits in meditation 10, 15, 20 hours a day and watches it.
Yeah.
Do we do that? Uh-uh. We're out acting it out, letting it run our lives, riding it like a horse, you know?
Lucky to meditate for 1 minute.
Right. And we can't meditate for 1 minute. I don't have time. I got to, you know, go out there and run my ruler. So, yes.
And then there can be another day that I'm thinking, oh, he was really in a hurry to get somewhere. I should let him go. And I'm back and forth. It's almost like this ruler kind of percolates up every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, the ruler comes in and says, well, you know better. You should do better.
Mm.
And I know all these things. And I know all the sayings. And what I should be doing to be higher and more evolved. But it's just still, like, it's unconscious.
It's unconscious and it bubbles in, and we're not going to dismantle it until we watch it, watch it, watch it, watch it, name it, see it, feel it, know it, watch it, watch it, and additionally say, this is useless.
So then you start there, to break it down?
And yes, and then it starts to quieten. And watching it means accepting it and granting it compassion. Now, obviously, I'm going to close with the point that I always make, is that when we do that, when we can own this negative aspect, just this one little piece, we study a zillion pieces, but this is a powerful, when we can own it and watch it and watch it and watch it and accept it and know it, admit it, talk with our friends about it, share like we do here, then what happens is that which is wonderful, true, beautiful, loving, kind, wise, infinite inside of us has room to start bubbling up into our lives and into our consciousness. And our being starts to be infused with what Andrew Harvey would call our divinity, birthing our divinity. But that can't happen until we face and own the stinkiness that we are and not judge it and not hold it against ourselves. So the gift is that all that's wonderful for us, that's in us, can be liberated as we do this work. Does that make sense? That's why we do it. We don't do it to flagellate ourselves and, oh, aren't we? We do it to see so that that which is more wonderful about us can be birthed. Yes?
And if we go into the flagellate, you know, criticizing ourselves, that's us choosing the unhappiness.
Yeah, that, yes.
That is
that's choosing unhappiness.
Rather than bringing consciousness to
absolutely. Yes, and the hardest part for me to get on this journey was there was a way that I got off on beating up on myself. There was some negative pleasure, and now I see that that was the ruler. That was the ruler. Raging because I was this and not that.
And as we do that, we don't own what we really are.
Right. Yes.
The thing that runs through my mind is, though it is so very unconscious, It almost seems as if we, in some way, have to... I realize that our job is to really stay present to the moment and to see our behavior, that it's disconnected from what's going on. Like, it's inordinately greater response. Somebody pulls out in front of you. You didn't get hurt. Nobody got hurt. You're just mad they went in front of you. And so you just go after them. But you don't know that you're actually doing that in a way that's promoting your ruler. You don't know this.
We haven't known it, but we could know it now.
We could know it now.
Yeah, we haven't known it. That's like I said in the beginning, so much of what we are learning in pathwork, each little piece, up until we have learned it was unconscious. It was just running the show, and we didn't have any power in relationship to it. Now there's the possibility of having some power in relationship to your ruler. Yes, one more question, then we have a wonderful meditation planned. That would be the same thing. Yeah, that's the ruler saying it doesn't want the 50-50. You know, there's going to be happiness here, there's going to be hurt here. Mm-mm, I don't want any of that. I'd rather be miserable. I'm not going to compromise. Okay, so Barb has planned for us, we need to use the mic too, has planned for us a holiday meditation, so put all of your, if you need to take a quick pee break, do, and put all of your books on the floor, your feet on the floor, get yourself comfortable, and Barb is going to do a, yes, you can turn that off, Barb is going to do an opening the heart body meditation for us to prepare us for the holiday seasons of ongoing Hanukkah, Christmas, the winter solstice, and Kwanzaa. okay, I'd like you to get as comfortable as possible in your seat with both feet on the floor. Relax your shoulders by just letting them drop. Take a few slow, deep breaths into your belly. And on your exhalation, just let your belly relax. Let any tension or tightness drop down into the seat beneath you. Relax your legs by just letting any tightness or holding just flow down your legs into your feet and into the floor. As you continue breathing, let yourself know that right now there is absolutely nowhere you have to go, nothing you have to do, and absolutely nothing you have to think about. Imagine a warm stream of light coming in through the top of your head and gently gathering up and carrying away and down through you all your thoughts, all your concerns, all your fears, just being washed down through your body. Removing any tension and tightness and carrying it down into the earth. Now just allow yourself in this moment to be open to an experience of real and true love. We want to let go of all of our thoughts and ideas and concepts about love and just be open to an experience of love. One that we can feel, truly feel in every cell of our body, in every fiber of our being. And the key word here is to allow. Just allowing ourselves to experience love and letting go of any preconceptions or expectations about how that might feel. We want to open ourselves to receiving this love as a gift that's being freely offered to us right now in this moment. With your next in-breath, imagine yourself allowing love to come into you with your breath, allowing it to permeate you. Imagine that you can breathe into every pore of your body, and it's as if you're a sponge, just soaking up love like water. And allow these loving waters to awaken the love that already abides within every cell of your body. So with each in-breath, you're breathing in love, and with each out-breath, you're letting go of any resistance you have to receiving this love. And just allow this love to guide you. It's nothing you have to try to bring in, you have to force, you have to make yourself fear. Just let yourself surrender to love, to yield to it, and to trust it. And as you exhale, with each exhalation, let all of your resistance to experiencing this love be washed away. Let yourself relax. Let your tightness attention just be washed away down into the earth by an endless stream of love. Let your entire body vibrate with the warmth and aliveness of love, a love beyond words, beyond thought, beyond time or place. We're breathing love into every cell of our body. And we're surrendering to this love. And as this love vibrates within you, you can feel yourself expanding. Feel yourself becoming lighter, freer. As if you're composed of nothing but a pulsating and vibrant love. And just surrender to this feeling of lightness, expansion, vibration, aliveness. And feel yourself extending outward in all directions. As though we've become an expanding sphere of this vibrant, vital love. With each breath, let yourself expand, encompassing everything and everyone that's around us, in front of us, behind us, just expanding into the earth beneath us and into the sky above us. Allowing ourselves to become a sphere of pure love that can encompass everything and everyone. You know, this allow this sphere to fill the room we're in, to encompass every person in it. Let just this love expand into the building, into the community around us. Let yourself continue to expand such that the whole of Pittsburgh, everyone in it, are encompassed within this sphere of love. And this love that knows no bounds continues to expand, encompassing you, encompassing everyone, encompassing the entire state. Allow it to expand across the country, the mountains, the plains, the farms, extending across the continent. Across seas and oceans and rivers, encompassing all the waters and lands of the earth, all the people, all the plants and the animals, mountains and plains and valleys. And this love expands downward into the core of the earth itself, and upwards to include all the stars and the planets and the galaxies. And just allow yourself to sit in this vibrating sphere, this expanded state of love. Just allow yourself to rest in it. Allow yourself to be held. Allow yourself to feel the peace and the joy of being held. to arise in your mind. Don't try to think of a word. Just allow a word to arise that reflects and grasps this experience you're having, this experience of peace and joy and of resting in love. Feel how this word is connected to this experience you're having. This is your word for this experience. And then allow this word to bring you back here into the room. And this word can be your touchstone. So when you leave here tonight, when you go about your life, at any time you feel the need, allow this word to bring you back to a remembrance of this experience of being held in love. May your holidays be filled with peace and serenity and joy and love and pleasure. Go in peace. Go in God.